Hello, and welcome to another episode of At Your Expect. My name is Morgan, and I am joined here with Jordan.
Hey, what's up?
And Mike.
Hey, what's going on?
And we're going to go ahead and get started here. We'll first kind of break down what we're planning on talking about today. First, we definitely want to touch on GP Antwerp, which is a modern tournament. It's very relevant for us because we have an invitational coming up. It's the TCG 50K, and half of that is actually modern. So we definitely want to touch on what the results we get from GP Antwerp are. We also, of course, want to talk about the Star City Games Invitational, which Mike actually had the opportunity to attend. And I heard he did pretty well.
I did all right.
He did all right. And then after we, you know, kind of discuss the tournaments that happened over the weekend, we definitely want to dive into the TCG 50K, which I already kind of brought up. That's actually right in our backyard, so, you know, it's a huge tournament for us. All three of us are going to be attending it, so we definitely want to, you know, discuss kind of what we're planning on seeing, you know, and you know, what we expect to talk about, you know, what we expect to see at the 50K. And then after that, it's kind of going to be a shorter episode this week, so we're going to kind of go directly to our shout-outs. But Mike has assured me that he has some juicy stories for the Invitational.
I do.
So I'm pretty excited to hear about those. But first, let's go ahead and talk GP Antwerp. So this is a European GP.
It's a big win for Dickman. I mean,
correct, it was won.
Dickman exploded.
It was won by Splinter Twin, actually. That's what he was piling, and I'm going to get his whole name.
Tapped his Exarch again and again and again, and then victory.
I think it felt one of the twins, eh?
I'm sure that it felt pretty good. Now, his list and then another list actually showed up in top 8, if I'm not mistaken. But his full name is Patrick Dickman, and he was playing, you know, as we can see, Splinter Twin. Now, this is a deck that's kind of been around, you know, for quite a while.
I mean, since the dawn of modern, it's
right, exactly. Because this was sort of a deck in standard, even, in its time.
For sure.
Disney
Avengers
and Splinter Twin, when they were both in standard together. So, Mike, now I know you've played this list, a similar list. I know you've played Splinter Twin, actually.
Yeah, I did at the beginning of Modern.
Right, exactly. So, how much do you expect this result for this list to kind of affect, you know, tournaments going forward? Obviously, Splinter Twin's always kind of been there. Do you think it's going to, like, you know, increase it, decrease it? I expect that it'll probably increase the hate for it, maybe.
I mean, you see two copies of Splinter Twin in the top 8, and then you have multiple copies of Pod in the, you know, in the top 16.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it does seem like your Torpor Orbs are going to get better,
yeah,
you know, going forward, especially since both of these lists are the original blue-red sort of glass cannon lists. There have been the white-blue-red recently that, you know,
yeah, that had, like, Wall Bowman and stuff like that.
And,
like,
Celestial Colonnade, Restoration Angels. Like,
yeah,
ways to win the game that weren't,
yeah,
necessarily
secondary,
and these decks do not
rotations
have that. And it's fine. I mean, sometimes you just want to go, you know, turn three in a turn, you know, and just kill them. You do see the adaptation of Snapcaster Mages, you know, in the one list. Actually, both lists.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that the deck that won, you know, Patrick Dickman's list,
yeah,
has zero copies of Spellskite across the 75.
Yeah, that seems pretty interesting. I mean, Spellskite's usually a good foil to Splinter Twin lists because you can, you know, redirect targets to spells and stuff like that.
Right.
So that's huge.
It's good protection. I do see, though, this list playing Peak, which is awesome. So, like, the turn you go,
yeah,
for it, you're just like, let's make sure.
But, right, and they're playing it over things like Ataxia Probes because they want to be an instant speed deck rather,
right,
than a sorcery
speed
deck.
It's definitely a flash deck. You're playing Cryptic Commands, you're playing Snapcaster Mages, you're playing even Vidillion Clicks in the main. And you're not even... What's interesting about this list, I think, more than anything, is it's loaded up on 4 Pestermites,
mm-hmm,
as opposed to 4 Exarchs.
Right.
Which is interesting.
I think that is, like, a conceit to things like Oryok Champion. Like, if they have one Oryok Champion out, then you still don't just
for
lose.
Sure, but you also just, like, lose to Lightning Bolt a lot easier.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
I mean it comes, obviously, with its pluses and minuses.
Right.
I don't know, like, with Lightning Bolt being the most popular card in the modern format, that sounds really interesting to me.
I mean, well, you know, European... I'm going to be honest, European GPs do tend to... Yo, the lists always tend to skew a little bit, you,
yeah,
know, differently.
No, I guess,
yeah,
I'm just saying for people that are listening and thinking about the 50K, I don't know if that's necessarily correct. Because, you know, Lightning Bolt is in, like, what, 50K?
I mean, I haven't seen a Soul Sisters list, or, sorry, Morgan, but a Tokens list.
Oh, no, I've
been a long time, so...
Yeah. Right, right. And then, like, if you think about it, if he's done most of his testing online, those decks do exist online.
That's true.
Because they're cheap.
That's
right,
true. Sure.
So,
sure,
you know, this could have been something that he kind of just translated over...
From
online
to
real world,
yeah,
and not necessarily adjusted for what might actually be there.
It's true.
So probably more even list with Exarchs, and maybe, you know, take that into consideration when building your lists. So don't necessarily just kind of take this out for what it is. Rounding out the top eight, we do have an affinity list by Daniel Fior. And this seems to be a very similar list to what we've been seeing. Nothing kind of jumping out. He does have, you know, Galvanic Blast, which has become pretty a standard. They've really been branching out with their colors with, you know, having both blue and red and black across, making sure that they can cast all these cards that have all these, you know, different activated cards. Obviously, that's easy with Mox Opal, Glimmer Void, Springleaf Drum. But, you know, obviously still a very solid aggressive list. If you want to play an aggressive list, Affinity is definitely something that is out there. I think that is showing up a lot, and that does trigger people's ideas that, hey, maybe, you know, there needs to be some more hate for this.
I mean, you can, the problem with you can load up on hate for it.
Yeah, you can only do so much.
This deck does play four Thoughtseize out of the board, which is pretty interesting.
Right, yeah, most of them only play like two, from what I've seen, so jumping up to four.
Still seems like casting it is going to be an issue sometimes, but...
I mean, any kind of color spell that you have in there is, you know, sometimes it's going to be an issue, sure, but... I don't know. I don't know how much it actually comes up. I've seen these lists just, like, spit out their hands on turn two, and then, like...
I played that deck for a little while, too. It makes me really sad that, like... I can't think of it. I can't think of it. Shrapnel Blast is the problem I'm thinking of. Like, that card's just not even played anymore. It makes me so sad.
I know. I remember playing when it was just Red Robots, and, like, you would just play Shrapnel Blast.
That card is in Modern Masters Cube, though. So that's fun.
It is, because it was in... Modern Masters.
Congratulations, Jordan. You just did it. I know we're talking about Morgan. You may not know about Morgan. We'll get to Tron.
Don't jump off a bridge.
We'll get to Tron. We'll talk about Tron. There is a top eight list that is Tron. We do see Jund show up, so that, I mean, like, Green Bat, Black X, obviously be prepared for that list. This is not the list that was made popular in Detroit, not the Chandra list or anything like that. This is just more of your typical Jund list. He does have Kitchen Finks, so that is more... I think that's super traditional, right? Usually they play Finks or something like that.
It's honestly, you haven't seen Finks in these lists for a while. It's, you know...
They were doing that for a while. I know that. I know that it was Blightning.
In the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, and it just kind of cycles out. Usually they have different 3-mana cards all the time. So, yeah, obviously Jund is Jund. Anything that you kind of see that you want to point out...
I mean, unfortunately, this sounds terrible, but I mean, the top eight of this is sort of boring, minus the awesome affinity again, the awesome Infect deck.
Yeah, Infect kind of showed up again, which is kind of nice. You know, obviously this is obviously a deck that has been around. You usually see it in tournaments, but you see it in early rounds, and it doesn't necessarily make it through day two, let alone to top eight. To kind of see it kind of come up again is definitely interesting.
It's interesting. There's a guy, local player Randall Ruggles, who plays out of Guard Tower and Fog, that has been playing Infect since he started playing Magic, and he made day two of GP Detroit with it, and just people aren't ready for it. I think that's largely what it is. You're dead on turn three, and you're just kind of like looking at your hand like, oh, I guess I wish I prepared for creatures. And so, I mean, to see a top eight is really interesting, but I think it's just one of those decks that can take a format by surprise.
Sure, and I mean, like, obviously, it's not something that sees a lot of play. I think Infect and Auras are kind of very similar, all-in aggressive decks. So I think you see players bouncing between the two. But I also know that Infect, I think, is more popular in Europe. Because I've talked to, at Origins, I know when Infect was sort of a new thing in Standard. There was the whole, like, European teams that just kind of jumped all in on mono green Infect and stuff like that. So that was always interesting to kind of take note of. So that's kind of why I think we see it here. It is a good strategy. I mean, again, it's another aggressive deck that kind of shows up and you know, kind of just bashes face.
I saw it on day two of the Invitational in Legacy.
Oh yeah, there is they
Berserk baby.
They've featured, you know, Legacy lists that run Infect, and
so
it's definitely a list that is interesting. I've considered playing it, but I have no way of getting things like Misty Great Forest and Noble Hierarch, so I kind of pass.
Oh,
on
come
that.
On! Literally has said minus the land, seven rares.
I understand, but they're also expensive rares.
It's true. It's true.
They're more than the rest of the deck.
Pitch.
Listen, and the lands. Hey, I don't have $200 to spend on Misty Rainforests. Nope. Some of us weren't smart and got them. Like you. You're smart. You got them. You have them.
That was a compliment.
Oh,
that
was
a great time for a compliment.
I was insulting myself because I wasn't smart.
Take two.
And of course, we can't not talk about Living End showing up in the top eight and two. I mean,
because Europeans love their combo.
I mean, this kind of worries me because we'll kind of talk more about this in 50K. But I'm thinking about playing a graveyard-based deck for the 50K. So this kind of makes me a little bit worried that people might be stepping up their graveyard hate. Now the deck I'm playing does have answers to that, which is kind of nice, but it's still a concern. But I still don't understand how this deck beats things like.
Main deck Deathrite Shamans and Scavenging Oozes?
Well, I think it's just faster. Like, I think that it can cycle so quickly that... Okay, so you play your... If you play something like Deathrite into... Like, you'd have to have a Deathrite into Scavenging Ooze, and then you might be able to erase it. I mean, this deck has to be faster, right?
You mean a consistent... I mean, depending on how many Scavenging Oozes you're playing, I mean, a consistent play is, you know, turn one, fetch land, Deathrite Shaman, turn two, you can cast your Ooze with a green up. I mean, it's not...
Sure.
I mean, it's not... I don't know. Right. I mean, it's... I mean, it's... I don't know. I mean, you're probably right. You'll probably see more spell bombs, you know, Neo spell bombs and more... well, just graveyard hate in general, so...
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand how this deck beats a Rest in Peace, but... Maybe we'll see more of that.
Didn't see any. There's not a lot of Rest in Pieces running around. There should be more Rest in Pieces.
I would say that I agree, but I disagree because I don't want that. But I do agree, I do have to agree as a smart player and seeing, you know, two of these lists show up in top eight and be like, how does this list beat that? I've played against this list with Graveyard Hate in play and active, and it's just faster. You can just cycle through your deck so quickly that... You know, you still, even if they're exiling a creature or two, you know, you, if you think about it, you cycle two, three creatures at a time every turn. So
not until turn. I mean, if you have a good draw, I mean, you're by turn three is when you're cycling multiple creatures, I guess.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that's fine. So,
I just think these lists are just faster than your typical, like.
That's fair.
You can only exile one creature, you know, on turn three. Well, I guess you can exile more, but like even if you can only do so much.
No, I agree,
and I think
you can still. I mean, the sideboard cards against it are just like absolute, like
yeah.
It's kind of like Dredge. Like it's just like, well, you got it. Good game.
Right. Exactly. Lay another void. All right, I lose. All right. Yeah, that's basically what it is. And these lists kind of function in that same facet, but I don't think that you can really. These lists could play a turn zero leyline of Leyline of the Void or a Rest in Peace. Just because like they're just so fragile, they rely so much on the graveyard.
Right, right.
So we'll go ahead and we'll talk about Tron, and so this is the only Tron list that showed up in the top eight.
Yes.
Thank you, Jesus. Jordan, this is kind of interesting because they played Ulamog.
They don't
play Emrakul.
He's retarded.
What? I mean, he's just easier to cast, right?
Jeez, what's he supposed to say in front of the guy?
Yeah, that's not very nice.
No, Fabrizio played the 11 mana cost Ulamog instead of the Emrakul, which I don't know. It doesn't just win the game outright like Emrakul does, which is kind of the interesting thing. And then I don't know where he. Like, I just don't know. I don't know if I agree with that.
I mean, I would really like to ask him, like, what was that choice? Like, why was that decision made? Like,
right. Because I bet you there's so many times where you have Ivy Mugen in game one, and you're like, well, I'd love to just win the game right now, but I guess I'll just go get, you know, Ulamog, but whatever. I don't know.
So maybe you can't cast the Emrakul.
Yeah, maybe it's just that he wanted something that he could easily cast and present a threat that someone had to deal with more.
But I cast the Emrakul more often than not, though. That's kind of the thing.
Well, to be fair, I mean, if you haven't tested it, though, I wonder how much more often you could cast Ulamog.
Fair enough. But, I mean, like, if every time I cast Emrakul is a game winner, and I cast him at least once a match, I feel like that's good value.
That's fine. I mean, he still has it on the board.
No, yeah. No,
right.
I'm curious as to what matches he brings it in for. I mean, I guess anything with Torpor Orb. Does he play in Torpor Orbs? I didn't see. He's playing two. Okay. Any matchup where he brings in those, he's playing for the long game. I guess, like, Emrakul is good, like, you know, and maybe he was predicting this heavy aggro meta that we just looked at with the top eight, like, with Infect and Affinity, because Emrakul would be really bad in those environments. Whereas Ulamog would help you win. I do like the Allah's Dust. I wish I wouldn't have traded my GP Detroit promo.
You didn't actually. I have it.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah, I have it.
Oh, well.
I forgot.
I might need to borrow my card.
That's all right. I mean, it is yours, but I've been keeping it safe. Don't worry.
Thanks, dude. All right, I had you hold it before we went to eat. Yeah,
yeah. Hilarious. So you just, like, pull it out right now. Like, what's behind your ear?
I'm not that magical.
But yeah, so, I mean, I like that card. I think it's an interesting choice and probably worth testing out at least. But
yeah, I mean,
test a card 3 days before an invitation.
It's interesting. I think that you should probably play what you're comfortable with, which is ever cool. But it's interesting to see that people are still with, like, such a set list. People are still, like, experimenting with it.
Yeah.
Like, playing with it.
I wonder if in hindsight he would have rather had the Emrakul. I'm fine with Ulamog in the board. Like, you know, 2 Eldrazi. What's better than 1 Eldrazi is 2.
Yeah.
But, sure. Like,
all these Eldrazi.
But, yeah, I'd be curious to talk to Brother Frenchie and see.
Brother Frenchie.
Fabrizio.
Well, okay, I'm going to have to apologize for to all our European listeners. He doesn't mean it.
Particularly the French ones.
He just doesn't know where you live.
Yeah.
He couldn't identify it on a map.
You're the boot. That's Italy.
That's Italy. We're still wrong. We're sorry, Italy. We're sorry.
Word of note, he wasn't trolling. He's just dumb.
he knows not what he says.
He just knows not.
Just knows not.
Is this an appropriate time for a USA chant?
Probably.
Let's move forward. Okay, all right.
You don't love the
league. I'll say this. I mean, in the top 16, you had a couple instances of Pod. You had multiple instances of Jund. You had multiple instances of Affinity. At this point, you know, if you're planning for this weekend, and we'll talk about that more, I guess, going forward. But, I'm telling you right now, I'm going to try something new. I'm not going to tell you if it's good, but I feel like, I don't know, Modern isn't getting played enough to have people actively trying to fix it, or not fix, but break it. Does that make sense? Like,
sure.
Like, you're not preparing weekly like you are for Opens, so you don't have the drive to do it. Like, you're, so,
yeah.
I don't know.
There's less money in Modern than there is in Standard.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because I really like this format, but because it's just not getting a lot of play and attention, I feel like it's going to get stale quickly, so I hope Wizards wants to step in and do something about that. And, of course, we have Modern. You know, the problem is we have so long before the Modern PTQ season. That
right,
just like,
exactly.
It's hard to care about this Detroit result, or this Antworth result, when, like you said, what do we have until next summer?
I mean, hats off to TCG Player. Like, they want to do a split format event. They want to be different from Star City, so they're pushing Modern and not Legacy.
I'm genuinely pretty excited about it.
Because, I mean, maybe we'll see. So Star City said they're going to push for Legacy for the next year. Maybe TCG Player steps in. They did say they're going to have Modern States, correct?
Yeah.
So maybe they'll have some Modern 5Ks or some 1Ks. I mean,
yeah.
I'd like to see somebody start supporting it enough so that it's a format that around the country and, you know, at Worker Play, you're on your way, the
right.
Amazing Stores and Speedway.
well,
ding! But, honestly, the people go around and trying to, you know, make a metagame that you're trying to beat, trying to build a deck for. Because otherwise, I think it's going to really quickly, you know, it's already heading this way. It's going to go the way of Extended, where people just won't play it until they're told to, and it just won't be a fun format.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, I honestly think that Wizards is trying to avoid that when making this. And I know that we've had extensive talks about Modern on this podcast. But Wizards doesn't want that to happen. I still think that it needs external support, so not just Wizards, but something else. So hopefully,
Wizards isn't doing much support. I mean, we're just getting 2 months.
Yeah, so
yeah, GP and the random PD, right?
Yeah.
So, but there needs to be some sort of outside support with it, I think. That'll definitely push it.
And the Modern FNM thing has done real well. How many have local stores fired?
Not many.
Yeah.
They barely fire one a month, I guess.
It's unfortunate
because it's very hard. Because you don't get as much players. So it is, Standard is still the cash cow, and Draft is still the cash cow.
True as well.
Right.
So it's very hard for them just to be all in on supporting it. And I can understand that.
What's funny, a local store, you know, like our team store, Comic Town, tried to fire Tuesday Night Moderns during the month of October. I went every week. The largest group was 4.
Yeah, that's upsetting.
It was a fun little 4-way Modern game, but then I just went home.
Well, I mean, overall, congrats. I mean, it must have been a hard-fought way to the top for Dickman, so.
All right, well, let's
he
go ahead.
He did his results up, and he did this weekend. So good for Dickman.
We get it. His last name is Dickman. It's kind of funny.
You're the one who...
Yeah, that was you. Don't do that to us.
Do you really just mean...
Oh, guys, we're on here. I got to be mature and responsible now.
One of us has to.
Yeah, go jump off a bridge.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on to the Invitational, since we actually had someone that attended the Invitational. it's definitely going to be the bulk of our podcast tonight. And so first, do you guys want to just talk about the top 8 and then kind of break into results?
I'll be very honest. The top 8 had a lot of awesome names, but because it was Legacy, it was probably one of the most miserable things to even watch on camera.
Sure.
You had four, was it correct?
Four Sneaker Show
lists. Four Sneaker Show lists. Almost the exact same Sneaker Show lists because they were together. I mean, if you watch the BBD versus Brad Nelson matchup and then watch BBD brick for like 15 draws,
yeah.
I mean, like, you're just like, well, this is a fun game. Did you draw a creature? No? Pass turn.
Well, then, would you guys want to talk about the 8-0 and 7-1 standard lists? I mean,
we can take a look at that.
I mean, that's fine. Yeah,
I feel like the Legacy lists, I mean, no offense, I mean, Legacy is not really what we do anyways.
No, it's really not.
The top 8 was pretty boring. It really
right.
was.
Yeah. And these, like, I think it's definitely important to look at these lists, like the lists that actually performed, you know, performed well, I should say, instead of just, like, the top 8 lists from the people that top 8 it, because obviously those lists also did well, and we do have some crossover, but taking a look at the actual list that went almost undefeated is definitely important, especially, you know, going into a big tournament that we were going to have this week. And, I mean, of course, we have to mention that one of our own, Riley Curran's list, was one of the lists that was 8-0-7-1.
I told you I had many little vignettes to tell you here.
Sure, if this is a good time for one.
Riley did not do well in Legacy, which is surprising, because Riley Curran is like an Elves master.
Yeah, usually he's known for his Legacy performance.
He and Kurt Crane both were on the same list, and both good Legacy players, and got beat up. Some bad draws, some bad luck. And so, you know, Riley sort of limped into day two and then proceeded to X1 Standard and took 33rd in the event of his to 32nd.
Man. Heartbreak kid, Riley.
He was the last player at 33 points, but he had the worst breakers at 33 points and took 33rd.
Well, Mike, you remember the TCG 5K this summer where you and I were like, okay, we're going to draw in the top 16, it'll be great. Then I was 17th and you were 18th, and it was just like, well.
That didn't work.
Oops. Yeah.
But, sorry for Riley. He took it, you know, Riley's always a positive guy. He took it in stride and probably just thought that, you know, the world was trolling him anyways, so.
That's how he looks at things, like, good kid.
So as far as Morgan wants to look at the 7-1, 8-0 lists, you know, you have some average stuff. We have Esper, we have Mono Blue Devotion, we have Mono Red Aggro, we have a couple Green Red Devotion lists. We have Riley's Junk Midrange deck, which we'll talk about here. And we have really, I think, the breakout list, as much as I, you know, am loathe to say it. Not really, I mean, whatever. But,
is it who I think it is?
It's Brad Nelson playing Naya Control. What I do think is interesting here about this is, you know, he was keeping the deck a secret. I know a few people who he had given the list out and borrowed cards to play in the standard, you know, the standard event with it. The deck has some power.
Before we get started, now, you do understand that I shared this list with you guys before Brad Nelson played it, right?
What do you mean?
Remember when I said that we have a Facebook chat.
That was a strictly Boros list that you sent.
There was another list. There was a Naya Control list.
Oh, okay.
It was the Moto list that Kit was playing.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
That guy. It was similar to this. It's very true.
Yeah, so I know for a fact that Brad Nelson contacted that player and discussed his list. I don't know. I know for a fact because it was on a stream. I forget the...
Brad Nelson was watching the stream.
It's Rayat27 is his screen name.
Right.
He's actually not necessarily a very scrupulous player, but he does have a bad reputation, and is actually currently banned from some sanctioned play. But I mean, his list is clearly good, and we were discussing it in the chat.
I watched him play for a little bit.
So this list was not necessarily like a hugely known quantity, but I mean, I don't know. I feel like it's kind of hooky that they both kind of came across this list, maybe. I don't know. I don't know why to just say this is fully Brad Nelson's creation.
That's a fair point.
And that brings up an interesting... The story you were telling me earlier, which I assume you'll share.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's not really my story, but yeah, that's... I mean, I can't blame the guy for doing that.
Well, no, tell a story, because I think it's relevant to this question.
One of the players we went with this weekend, day two, John Meidinger, who we gave a shout-out to last week, did pretty well at GP Louisville, playing Mono Black. And had seen Brad Nelson on day two, and had sort of jokingly like, "Hey man, what's the tech today?" And Brad Nelson essentially told him he does not give out his tech on Saturdays, which is fine. You know, obviously you shouldn't have to. And of course,
John tried to troll him, and he got the big FU. But
it's just a total John thing to do. But come on, baby, just tell me the tech. We're friends, you know?
Honestly, the thing I thought was the funniest in the world, because I knew people were going to complain about it, is Brad Nelson's article from last week. It says, like, read him a Monoplex Devotion and why you should play it at the Invitational this weekend.
Oh, and then he just always nodded.
Follow me down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Right, and like that's why I really think, in all honesty, that this list wasn't as much as his own creation as he states it was. Because this list had shown up, it was completely Reynard's list, he was the only one playing it. I mean, and then, I'm just saying.
We talked about it last week. Like, honestly, if you want to get, you know, look at one of these deck builders and get behind them and be like, you know, how dare you say that about Brad Nelson, Brian Bronduin, you know, any of these people who've done the, you know, built these decks. Remember that they're building decks based on what they see in lists and metagames. I mean, I've been brewing my Boros list. Todd Anderson had a Boros list, the same week that I was writing my article for it. A similar list shows up on Moto. Does it matter whose it is?
No, I guess not, but it's just, it feels weird. Like, so you can create something. Mm-hmm. So you as a writer,
yeah.
You can create an article, but what if someone else just put their name down and said, oh, this is mine? I mean, what makes it so different with the deck?
A copyright, different from a game that's based on invariable amounts of deck building.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, like, what's the prestige of being a deck builder if someone else is just going to steal your thunder?
Well, I mean, it doesn't mean winning. Winning is the ultimate equal. Well,
but it doesn't matter, but because he won with his list online, but... No one.
Who cares if you won it? If you forward a daily online,
I mean, the difference obviously is if if Brad Nelson goes around and tells everyone that this is only his list, but having knowingly talked to this guy, then you know it just continues a stereotype, anyways. So
that's true.
I mean, and it's just
we love Brad Nelson on this
podcast. I'm well beyond that. I mean, he's just a guy. He's fine. Whatever. Yeah, but. I'm just saying, if you're gonna jump up there and really back these people on this, you might want to do the same research that I'm just saying.
Right, and who knows? I guess I haven't really heard Brad Nelson's side of the story. I don't know if he's claiming this as being his list.
I
know the commentators were definitely attributing all
But what do they know? And I don't mean that like they're idiots. I mean like. When they see the deck, they have never seen the deck before, and they're not spending their time doing commentary searching for that list, and that's how this kind of thing happens. And
sure,
I mean, if the other guy, it's unfortunate for the other guy is that he has a bad reputation in the first place. So stole my list. Well, you're kind of a scumbag. Oh well, that sucks for me.
Well, there's an interesting point that you brought up. I think there's this underlying presupposition that in Magic journalism, Magic coverage, there's not this generalistic responsibility to know these things. You know, the coverage guys on ESPN do know what the hell they're talking about before they get in the booth.
There's actually tons of instances of them wrongly attributing things. I'm not trying to shit on
No,
here.
No.
But I mean, like, that's an important discussion.
There's still work that goes into it, right? Whereas these guys are like, well, I've never seen this list before, and this must just be his. Well, that's just really, really wrong, right? And, at least ESPN is quick to correct.
What I will say is, no matter what the deck is, like, if you're running the deck, somebody's going to say, oh, well, that's it. It's his deck. It's your deck.
Sure.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
So the maybe the verbiage is wrong, but
right. Well, I know. You know when you get your DCI deck registration form and there's like deck designer. Did you put like when I was running Jund, when Morgan and I were on Jund, did you put Reed Duke or Morgan McCarl?
I put NA. I usually put NA on my deck.
I mean, I did write Willie Edel down for Naya.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I put Go Islanders Jund, Reed Duke / Matt Somerhalder is what I wrote on the.
I mean, regardless of the if. The deck building thing, if people want to argue over whose it is, it's a known quantity now. Meaning everyone can switch literally a card, and that's what I'm saying as far as plagiarism. Like in Magic, you're like, well, I switched this card, and I was the first one to add. I was the first one to add Demolish in the sideboard, which was a card cast against John in the Open this weekend. Or no, Josh. I'm sorry. And he had to. He thought he saw the Demolish and had to write down what Demolish did. So, but I'm just saying, you're the first one who added that, and that's your thing, and that's fine. If you're using it to do well, then using it to do well, it's how Magic metagames work anyways. So, right. As far as the list itself, I saw when the guy was playing it, you still don't have a lot of ways to fix your top decks, and you're playing 26 lands and key runes. You have a lot of dead draws. You also are playing double green, double red, double white.
Yeah.
Across multiple places on your curve with a mana base that isn't terrible,
but is also terribly slow. Like, Anger of the Gods does a lot to help that.
Yeah.
But you can just die, and quick. So, I mean, I think this deck was, it was built sort of as the mono black beater.
Sure.
And I did, I watched, I'll say, so Dan Musser piloted this deck on Standard Open on Saturday, and I watched him beat, in a feature match in round 10, beat Laura Nolan playing mono black. It was not close. And Assemble is where you wanted to be, and I played Assemble of Legions as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's where you wanted to be, and this deck is a really good Assemble of Legions deck. So, the deck's fine. Watch out for it. I mean, everyone's still playing Xenagos, Elspeth, Stormbreath Dragons. I mean, this is literally what Naya does. Wow, all these cards are good.
Yeah. I mean, do you think that this is something that could, like, be compared to old Jund? Like, old standard Jund?
It doesn't have the real disruption that that deck had. It doesn't have the threat of Bonfire that deck had. And even, like, Jund now can just play, like, Thoughtseize, which is an angle this deck just doesn't get.
Yeah.
I mean, you get wear and tear out of the board, but, like, draws where you don't have an Assemble or your Assemble gets Thoughtseized, you can still just get card advantage out because every other creature you have or planes... I mean, your Planeswalkers die to Heroes Down, fall, your creatures die to Doomblade. Chain of the Rocks are good. They're really good right now. I will say it's one of the best removal cards in Standard, and Celestial Charm is fine as well. But against Mono Black, I mean, outside of, you know, Pack Rat, Anger of the Gods, and Mizzium Mortars aren't doing anything. They're not doing anything against control decks. So I think compared to old, I mean, I will say it's similar to Jund in the fact that you can just, like, you can be playing against Esper in game one, just draw all your Chain to the Rocks, Angers, and Mizzium Mortars and die.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
or
I remember that feeling.
Or you can play against Mono Red and draw all your Elspeth, Stormbreath Dragons, and Summer Legions and just die.
Yeah.
So you do have to draw that one half of your deck. The Temples do a lot to help.
Yes, right. I think that definitely brings an interesting
But obviously
dynamic.
Only having two colors of them is a little rough.
Oh, well, yeah.
This deck is something you got to watch out for. Four Mistcutter Hydras, real game out of the board, though you don't have the same ramp you do out of the Devotion decks. I mean, this deck attacks on a lot of angles. You've got to draw well when you play it. You know, I asked Dan, like, how was your mana all day? And he's like, it's been rough.
Yeah.
So he won a lot of games with the powerful spells, but the games he lost, you know.
He lost hard.
So.
I mean, it's definitely understandable, and it's nice to see something new. Hopefully, I imagine that we will be seeing these lists show up at 50K in Standard.
Oh, I'm sure.
I'm 100% sure, because I think that a lot of people have been hyping Assemble Legion. I know this and, like, Blue White Red, which has been powered, which has been, I should say, what's the proper word here? It's definitely had its banner carried by Shaheen Serrani. Yeah, popularized by Shaheen Serrani.
I'm going to be all politically correct now when we attribute deck lists to people.
Well, I know that he's been someone that's been... It's not necessarily a particular list, but he's definitely been pushing it because of things like, you know, Assemble Legion being very hard for Mono Black to deal with. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's kind of there. Like I said on last week's podcast, I really wish that we had green Scrylands, just so you could just splash a little bit of green and just play some really techie things out of the mono black list. I mean, you can do it right now, but I just don't think it's as good, obviously.
Yeah.
But I mean, we do have some other lists that are kind of here. We do see that things like Esper have shown up as being a winning list from Standard. We have things like Junk. I actually haven't taken a look really at Riley's list.
Honestly, it's essentially just a continuation of Dan's list, Dan Muster's list from Star City before the Pro Tour. But it does feature four copies of Reaper of the Wilds, and
right.
I will say Riley was touting that card as the card he really wanted to cast the most.
Mm-hmm.
Was really enjoying playing with that card. I told him that I didn't like it as much as he did, but it obviously did fine for him.
Right.
So. You know, he's able to put enough threat down where, you know, Reaper is its own threat. We had a buddy here who was trying out Reaper as, like, the top end of an aggro deck, which is, like, if you can clear the board minus the Reaper, then the Reaper doesn't feel that bad. But in Riley's deck, you get to go Reaper into Obsidian.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it's like,
right.
Well, okay, now you're putting real pressure on, and the Reaper's still hard to kill, and it's really hard to kill Obsidian. So now you put real decisions in there, you know, in front of them. So it's interesting. He said he did really well with the list. Ryan is also a really good player, though. So,
yeah. Certainly.
But going X and 1 in Invitational and Standard is still, you know, really rough to do.
Oh, I completely agree. But I really like this list. Like I said, you know, I take a look at these mono black lists, and, like, they just seem so not necessarily one-dimensional. I don't want to say that, but they seem to have hard times in a lot of things. They don't draw the right cards to deal with the interactions. And especially with things like, with you know, really high level control decks like Esper kind of taking off. I think that's definitely a slog through with the mono black list. So having some other dimensional cards in here, while still retaining some of the mono black stuff, you know, we still see Underworld Connections and Heroes Downfalls, Ultimate Prices, Whips, Thought Seizes. So we still have some of those cards in there that are in those lists, but we get some, you know, interesting things like Golgari Charm, which I think is what deck doesn't necessarily get hurt by Golgari Charm in some facet, except for like I think probably like the fast decks, the mono red decks probably don't really give a shit about Golgari Charm, but Esper does, because it counters two of their things, it kills their enchantments and can regenerate all your creatures. Mono black definitely does, because it kills, you know, things like Underworld Connections, and I mean, if they play a turn two pack, right, you can kind of kill that with it, I guess. If you want to be cute.
Minus one, minus one, bitch.
Dead. Even in mono blue, if they're playing Biden, it kills Biden, which is pretty interesting. So Golgari Charm, I think, is a really interesting kind of dimensional card right now that I really want to play.
In a format where Destroy Target Enchantment is good.
Yeah. Turns out, during an enchantment block, well, Destroy Target Enchantment is only good because it doesn't kill gods. But if it, you know, did that, it'd be great. But I really like Golgari Charm. I've been trying to think of a way to play this, and maybe this is the answer, maybe this is the route I need to take. I'm not sure. Right now, I'm still, you know, planning on playing Mono Black, just because I have all the cards for that, but we'll see, you know, where this takes me. I also have a real strong urge to play Esper. Let's take a look at that undefeated Esper list. If we can. Mike, if you have it up.
I'm pulling it up right now.
Perfect.
So, pretty base list. You see, once again, the Ashiok got put in the sideboard here. We have four Jaces, two Elspeth, one Aetherling, and then the full suite of removal. One Far and Away, you know, three Heroes Downfall. So they're really trying to mix it up a little bit.
The only difference being, instead of Doomblaze, they play Ultimate Prices.
Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting how, you know, old format, Ultimate Prices terrible. Devotion format, you know, it would really suit.
Ultimate Prices. Yeah.
Yeah. One card that, if you go read my blog on outyourinstump.com, I was kind of following the Cedric Phillips bandwagon for a little bit, and strongly considering cutting the Elspeths in a format with Heroes Downfall and Tension Spheres. It's kind of, six mana is a lot to just play three soldiers. In the board or in the main, yeah, that card wins games if your opponent draws nothing, but almost every deck plays something that kills it. Whereas you can just play two Blood Barons main. And that card is kind of a house against a lot of decks right now.
Sure. I still think that you kind of would want Elspeth. I don't know. I mean, obviously Blood Baron, it does have its advantages in certain matchups.
Maybe it's a really case of the feel bads when you're like, all right, Elspeth plus one. They're like, okay, to turn.
Sure, but it's also a real case of the feel bads when you go Blood Baron, you have that Devour Flesh there.
Oh, yeah, that's their one. That's their one out, though, the Blood Baron.
But they can also just
Thought Seize their one out too.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, it's I feel like that's a lot more prevalent in the field than Devour Flush.
I guess, I mean, but think about this. Think if you're playing against green-red, like, you can play an Elspeth and wipe their board in green-red, but you're going to play a Blood Baron and not do anything?
And get it busy more than...
Yeah, exactly.
It feels fine. I play Elspeth at FNM. It wasn't that big of an issue, but then you play it on Cockatrice, and you're like, well, like, everybody's playing mono-black. Now, granted...
Sure,
if,
but you...
If 40 to 50% of the field's mono-black, then, like...
I mean, the problem is you're playing it. You see, like I'm playing Elspeth, but I'm also playing a deck with a lot of other tasty Heroes Downfall targets.
Yeah.
So, like, the problem for you is they're just going to sit on Heroes Downfall until you play Elspeth.
I don't know. That two of my viable win conditions, like Jace and Elspeth, are Heroes Downfallable.
Well, that's fine. I mean, they'll probably play it on Jace as well. But I think most players, I'd sit back on one. Like Jace is a stream of card advantage, but if they have an Underworld Connections, then they're not as worried about your Jace. Not to mention that depending on how their start was, they may just be able to, you know, kill your Jace.
Yeah.
You hear what I mean? Like, oh, I guess I'll just turn this Erebus on now.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, for sure, but I think they're definitely going to play the Elspeth. You know, Elspeth does make demons look pretty terrible. Either you just kill them or you sack your tokens to them.
Yeah,
So sure. There's that. and definitely playing Blood Barons makes your wrath a little more awkward because you really have to be careful when you're
wrathing.
Because if you wrath away a Blood Baron, then you're probably going to put yourself in a really awkward spot. Whereas with an Elspeth, it's like, please, wrath the board. I like it when you wrath the board.
Right.
I'll just make more guys.
Yeah, and that's, like, I know definitely Cedric Phillips was like, yeah, Elspeth is just terrible. What does it do against the format? I'm like, yeah, it doesn't do anything against things like Mono Blue. And Mono Black.
What does Aetherling do against Mono Blue? At least game one.
Exactly. Like you.
Yeah, I mean, you probably take
Aetherling. Cards in your main deck are bad against some of the prevalent decks in the format, but it doesn't mean they're bad against all the decks. You want Elspeth.
Well, I think the argument's not that it's bad against some and then good against others. The argument is that it's bad against most. And then that's where changing a deck comes into play. And then you start getting the inbred discussion.
I feel like we're going back to, like we can't play that creature. I mean, that's Doomblade.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Yeah, I understand both sides.
So it's like, what, you would never run like 4 Kiki Jiki in Modern just because like there's every deck plays Lightning Bolt and...
No, you don't play 4 Kiki Jiki in Modern because it's a 5-drop legend.
Well, what if 4 Kiki Jiki is back as a Lightning Bolt too? Like, you don't want Kiki Jiki as your one wing condition when you have Deceiver of Exarch and stuff like that.
Well, right.
So like, because Lightning Bolt's probably...
Right, so it's not like you're playing 4 Elspeth.
What's that?
You're never playing 4 Elspeth.
No, right, but 6 mana, like, I mean, it's just, if you have that experience, you're like 6 mana and they're like, here's Devil, you're like, oh, well, That was cool.
I mean, yeah, but that means... I'm playing a different deck. But in my deck, I mean, if they hear Heroes Downfall, then they don't have the Heroes Downfall for my dragon. You know what I mean? Like, that's...
Right.
You have follow-up. Yeah.
So, yeah, if they hear Heroes Downfall, my Elspeth, I'm like, shut up, I better hope I draw the other Elspeth.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Know? And so that's like, good. But see, that's going to happen. Maybe the other part of it, too, is Mono Black is a very... I mean, for Esper, I mean, that's a game that's going to be drawn out more than likely.
Yeah.
Where it comes down to them having multiple underworld connections and you having Sphinx Revelations. And
right. That's what it comes out
so
to.
So you probably shouldn't, if you know Heroes Downfall is happening, then either, one, you're bringing a Thoughtseize against them anyways.
Right.
So you should be setting up to protect your Elspeth then. And maybe what Cedric Phillips is suggesting is that it's not a worthwhile endeavor. Maybe it's not high impact enough to do that, but I don't know if I...
I think he's responding to a meta game as opposed to... Like, he's responding to 40 to 50% of the field being on the mono black or blue.
I mean, I'd much rather play... I'd much rather have access to at least one Elspeth than no Elspeth, personally. Because
she
adds so much, you know, versatility. I mean, she can... Yeah.
Sure. And I played her Friday, and, like, there wasn't a whole lot of mono black, and that kind of bodes well for a 50K.
Right.
Where in Columbus, there's just, like, maybe 5 mono black players.
Right.
And that's kind of good for that. Granted, the 50K is going to be huge, but I don't know.
It's definitely going to be big. But I would say, look at the sideboard for Troy Brestel. Mm-hmm. Look at the sideboard for his list. He has 3 Blood Baron sideboard. I like Blood Baron in the sideboard. That card, I feel, is fine in sideboard. I don't think it needs to go on the main deck.
I think that's fine as well. And then there's another, I mean, for playing the Esper game, the Open was also won by Esper Control, Harry Corvis.
That finals match was awful.
And he's essentially playing a really similar list. He's playing a Merciless Eviction in his main.
Yeah.
But he's got Blood Barons on the board. He does have a sick trading post on the board, which is just hilarious. And like all the value, it's like, oh, it's game for life.
Yeah, I heard it's just a Planeswalker that gains 4.
So, but I mean, like, same idea. So Blood Barons on the board. Maybe you're right. Maybe you'll break the format and put Blood Barons in the main. I don't think you will. I think because of the Nihilist.
Right, that's the thing.
I mean, you're going to shift into Blood Baron at the time when the deck's like, well, I guess I'll just run these 4 Mizzium Wards.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the thing, right? Is like, and now it's bad.
You're also playing the format deck right there where you're like, you know, how you want to turn on as little removal of your opponents as you can. Yes, Heroes Downfall is a big spell in the format, but it's the only spell in the mono black deck that can outright kill your Elspeth. And it's one of the few spells in the format can outright kill an Elspeth. Whereas, you know, Mizzium, you know, like, half the fun of your Esper deck is that you're like, well, I hope you drew a bunch of Mizzium Mortars because they're dead cards against me. Right. You know, if you open your hand with 2 Mizzium Mortars, right, it should be a mold of 5. But if you're playing Barons in the main, then all of a sudden you give them a chance for tempo plays, and you blow it out.
Sure.
So,
yeah.
Sure.
And then something else that we definitely want to take a look at here is the green-blue devotion list. Did you guys get a chance to see this list?
Is this the same one that was on the Mothership?
I don't know if it's the same one on the Mothership or not, but it's definitely a treat.
I mean, it's an interesting list, that's for sure. Yeah, people just want to play Prophet of Kruphix, like, real bad. I don't know.
The card's not good.
I mean, the card has an amazing ability.
If you want to job with it, it's whatever, yeah, but... Like it's just a two mana two. It's a 2/2, right?
It's 2/3. It still just has to know
Searing Sphere, well, or yeah,
Lightning Strike,
Incinerate, whatever.
I will say that what this deck gets, and one of the things that really has made the mono blue deck so potent. No, this is not the Mothership deck. Okay, the one thing that's really made this, you know, the mono blue deck so potent is Cyclonic Rift and the ability to just like Cyclonic Rift out of nowhere. I mean, right. I lost a game to Evan West, the eventual top eighter in Standard against mono blue, because he just curved out and, you know, I changed the rocks and things and we were on a pretty even board and he's just like, well, overload the Smithing Mortars, you know.
Overload the Cyclonic Rift.
Or Cyclonic Rift, I'm sorry. Bounce to your chain of the rocks. Thassa comes away as a creature. Trigger my Evolve on these guys. You dead?
Woo!
I was like, well,
that's the thing. Bitches.
That's the thing. Nice bonfire.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's definitely. I think this list. I think Prime Futures as Zagana looks really, really nice in this list.
I mean, Zagana is definitely sweet. It's still hard. Zagana is much better.
I just want to know how many times that he played Prime Futures Zagana and then activated his Nylea, let Nylea became a creature off of it, and then he drew six cards. Like, how many times did it happen? Was it awesome every time?
I'm assuming not many.
I would hope at least once.
I mean, if it did, it'd be sweet. Zagana, the only problem with Zagana that still keeps her down is the fact that you just get to kill things in response to her entering the battlefield. And the format's full of Doomblades and Heroes Downfalls and Cyclonic Rifts, and just like, oh, so you have a five five guy in play and you're playing Zagana. Yeah. Bounce the 5/5. Like, oh, draw a card?
Sweet.
Well, like, I played against a blue green white list. Josh, I think is his name, the guy from Comic Con. And he was the guy seems to love tokens or counters. He loves his 1/1 counters.
Okay.
And like, he's got Archangel and then the blue green guy. I had no idea that gave things flash. Holy God, the first time he did that, he was like, he flashed something in response to like me trying to do something. I was like, oh, well, we're going to Supreme Verdict. Okay. And then like, I even thought I was dead as Supreme Verdict. And he was just like, yeah, I guess I'm just dead. Because card doesn't actually do anything. You try to kill it.
So the card that you said was just bad. You're telling us about how you got blown out by it.
I just killed it. I didn't get blown out by it.
Oh, okay.
Like, I tried to do something, and he flashed a dude in, and like gave something lifelink, and he triggered his Archangel. I was like, oh, okay. Well, we got to deal with that. Like, Supreme Verdict. I thought like there was a way he
got it. Oh, well, I mean, that's gonna happen against this deck, anyways. I don't know. I don't think it's as good as just the mono blue decks because the mono blue deck is so blisteringly fast. You have to play four Garrick's in this deck, which is sweet.
Yeah, but I mean, like, this is more akin to like the green red devotion list,
right?
Like, it's just trying to go big
without as many of the good planeswalkers.
Sure,
right.
I understand. Like, it's definitely. I just wanted to point out.
Crushing the sideboard.
But it's so good.
I guess if you destroy a swamp, then
you defend the most ridiculous things sometimes.
Non-creature permanent. I think I'm going to be non-creature permanent. People have a hard time dealing with in this format.
Yes, but it's a 4-mana sorcery. The tempo involved in doing that. Like, well, you played a demon this turn. A little bramble crush your swamp.
I'm not saying that's what happens.
True demon. Yeah, like,
I'm just saying, when you bramble crush your swamp, it is a 2-for-1.
My problem with if they have.
Well, why would you just bramble crush your swamp without that?
A swamp.
Well, why would you do it without an Underworld connection attached to it?
What happens is you. And no, in all seriousness, I mean, this format with all the devotion decks, I mean, you know, they're. Just in playing against them, like, you stumble once, and you find yourself really far behind. So Bramble Crush seems odd when you're like, well, I guess I need to spend my whole turn killing something.
Yeah, but I mean, like, are you playing this on turn 4 with this list?
If you're playing on turn 3, you're still tapping your mana guy and just being like, well, your creatures that you already have in play, I hope they don't attack and kill me.
What creatures do they have in play on turn 3?
On turn 3?
Yeah.
So they resolve their Spectre that turn, and that means they can trigger their Evolve on their
if they're
wrong
on
guy.
Play.
They could already have had a Frostbite.
Oh, we're talking about. Were we just talking about Mono Blue? I was just talking about like other lists.
Oh, I'm saying
the red green,
the red green deck by turn 3 or 4 could be casting Arbor Colossus.
Sure, I mean, it's just, not draw.
On average, that would be the only playable thing.
So they're not draws to play Arbor Colossus on turn 4, and we're like, turn
3. But this deck could do the same thing. Like,
I know. I'm just...
Here's I understand.
List of
let's move away from Bramble Crush.
All right. I'm just saying. Like, I'm sure that it's not as bad as it looks.
Hey, you guys remember that time Morgan defended Brad Nelson on the podcast?
I have to do a lot of things to make this podcast interesting, guys. Right now, I'm my pants off. So, there's that.
Nobody can see that except for us. It's really weird.
But it does make it interesting.
And he's in me, in my house.
All right. Well,
can I tell my stories now?
Okay, yes. Yeah. So obviously
I'm such a good little boy, and I'm just like...
We've talked about the top list. Obviously, you know, we'll kind of talk about the expected metagame during the 50K. Mike, please divulge your lists to us. I mean, your stories.
Well, first off, I will say that I managed to money at 11-5,
yeah.
26th place.
Nice.
Did not manage to make either of the X1 or XO lists, so that's pretty exciting. I went 5-3 in Legacy with Shardless Book, a pretty generic list. I'm not brewing in Legacy.
But just like, it's just a powerful list. Like,
I wanted to play a deck, and I talked to a lot of people about it, that, you know, honestly, it had some game against a lot of different decks, and it plays a lot of value creatures, a lot of free two-for-ones without, you know, honestly, a lot of thought. Like, I'm playing a 1/1 flyer that draws a card. I'm playing Shardless Agent and getting a free spell. You know, the value allows me, like, there were a couple games where I knew I made a misplay, but I'm able to, it's like, well, I misplayed here. Oh, Shardless Agent? Oh, well, I can draw three cards now. Well, this will make up for it.
Right.
So, it definitely, I think it allowed me to take my relative play skill in Legacy, and then, you know, pad the points a little bit. And honestly, if you, I told all these guys who, you know, all these players in the local area, you know, I said like Riley Kern and Kurt Crane or Jesse Liu, you know, these guys were really good Legacy players.
Yeah.
You know, I looked at them after the end of day one. I'm like, if you would have told me that I would X1 in Legacy and you guys didn't, I would have said, like, then I must be winning this whole damn thing. So, which I didn't.
Well, we can see that.
So, I played against Combo 4 times. So, you know, it was very frustrating. Played against an awesome player from St. Louis, playing High Tide, and he crushed me.
Right.
Crushed me. And we actually may, we'll talk about him possibly coming on the show at some point. So,
oh, yeah.
This guy. So I'll hide the name for now.
Nice.
Okay. He's a good guy. Then beyond that, though, I beat Ant, Dream Halls, and some other Storm List. So felt pretty good about that. I had a very memorable game against one of the opponents where they had double Landline of Sanctity.
Oh, nice.
And I had to Thoughtseize myself to take my own Venser to make my Tarmogoyf big enough for lethal.
That's an interesting
play. And I was like, man, I really hope I don't just die this way. But I'm like, so I'm like, Thoughtseize, like, you can't target me. And I'm like, I'm not targeting. So I had to show him my hand that had a Forcible and a Venser in it and be like, well, I'm taking the Venser, so you know that I don't have Force Protection anymore. Are you dead? And he's like, scoop him up.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So,
wow.
So
that is a pretty memorable
list. I was happy with that. So, yeah, X3 and Legacy, I lost to two Delver decks in addition to the High Tide deck. The two Legacy decks were, or the two Delver decks, was one was Blue-Red, mm-hmm. and game one I had kept a hand that was really good against, but I, you know, pretty much it had a lot of disruption. It was a one-lander, but it had Thoughtseize and Deathrite Shamans, and it's like, okay. And my opponent on the play went Mountain Goblin Guide. It was like, and he went untap Mountain Goblin Guide. Oh. And I'm like, well, guess I'm just dead. And then the second game came down to this, like, sort of, I was ahead on board with the Goyf, and he had an unflipped Delver and two Mountains in play. And I was like at 11. I'm like, okay, well, I'll attack here and pass the turn. I think I'm going to win this race. And he blind flipped his Delver with no cards in hand.
Oh,
blind flipped his Delver off of Price of Progress.
Ooh.
The field bats.
So I lost that game. And then I lost a match to Kenta Hiroki, who's a pretty good you know, grinder from the Midwest playing Delver. And like that game, that was probably the game in Legacy where I felt the most outclassed. It was early on in day two, so I was sitting in the X2 or X3 bracket at that point. So still in contention for top eight, still doing all right, and just felt wildly outplayed. I made a bad block when there was a Rest in Peace in play, game two, and he stifled his exile trigger on his angel token after attacking with a Geist, and instead of double blocking the Geist with my Deathrite Shamans, which were useless, I just snap blocked the Geist with my Baleful Strix. Thinking he had another Geist with his last card in hand, but his last card in hand was the Siphon, which actually, you know, had I known the deck better, had I known the, you know, that's, I hadn't tested that matchup at all. I hadn't tested much Legacy matchups anyways. So, like, to see that, then it's like, well, now I can't block the Angel with these 1/2s, and right. Now I don't have a way to kill the Angel, and I end up losing the game with the Angel token still in play.
Right.
So, it was a little frustrating. You know, I made some bad decisions. I had an Ashiok in play against him, which did get to take a Delver and flip when I knew it was going to flip, which was sweet, and a Geist from him, but he still just knew when to ignore it, when not to.
Yeah.
I just, you know, that was the only match the entire weekend where I was like, you know what, I'm a nub in this format, and and I don't know what I'm doing. So I ended up 5-3 in Legacy. Interesting, fun story in Legacy. Round 1, 8 minutes left on the clock, playing against another Delver opponent who was not as good as Kenta. Nice guy, but not you. Know, and I'm pretty sure I'm turning the corner in Game 3. I feel like I'm winning. I thought seized to get the all clear. There's no matches left around us. There's a judge watching our game.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughtseize my opponent. The judge goes, "So which art of Thoughtseize do you like better?" I'm like, "What? The new one, I guess. Like, I don't know. Write down these cards." And like the rest of the day, I'm just like, I keep thinking it over and over in my head. I'm like, you know, then by the end of the day, I'm just like, "What?
Like, so why are you asking me that?
I don't do that."
If you're a judge, you can listen to your podcast.
I mean, seriously.
Wait, that's it?
I mean,
he just asked you what.
Yeah,
I thought there was like.
No.
But he interrupted the middle of a match when there was only 8 minutes left.
That's what happened.
Yes.
It sounded like that's what happened.
And like, he just like. So you guys going to the mall later?
You guys want to hang out?
Hey,
I asked the other people to go get Subway. They said no. You guys
want to get Subway with me? I'm sorry if you're a judge and you get bored really easily. Do something else. anyway, so then I did much better in standard.
It's competitive roles. This is F&M.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Team Ralph down at Comic Town. Like, this is judging competitive role of it.
Yeah.
In the money tables. Like, I'm actually dumbfounded. What?
Mistakes were made, clearly.
Mistakes were made.
Clearly.
I did put a bug in the ear of the head judge the next day. I was like, so I got asked this question during a match. Is that, I'm like, is that right? And he's like, no.
I was like, he knew who it was, too.
He did. Because he asked me to describe him to him, and I did. And he's like, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Aww.
And this, so
yeah, he asked us to go to Subway yesterday. We don't know.
like, I'm sure, you know, honestly, based off his comments, he seemed like a very nice guy. Very friendly.
A little bit too friendly, maybe.
I really swore when you were setting that story up that like you were gonna like Thoughtseize and he's gonna show you 2 Thoughtseize and he's gonna take.
No, no,
like I didn't know what was gonna happen, but I thought something.
Totally Shyamalan dealer.
Yeah, you did. Like
Shyamalanga ding dong.
Ding dong.
So moving on to standard, I played my big Boros deck to a 6-2 record. Was really really happy with the way it played out. I lost a really close 3-match game to Will Craddock, who's pretty well known in the open circuit.
Yeah.
Awesomely impressive beard. He was playing Mono Black Devotion and had the whip most, you know, pretty much every time. I had the wear and tear one game, and then Game 3 came down to him having many demons and me drawing 0 Chain of the Rocks. So it was upsetting. That was the last loss I got on day 1. And then day 2 in standard, I lost to, again, Evan West playing Mono Blue, who I just had the nuttiest of nut draws on me, curved out suit, you know, just beautifully. And then I said the second game had the, like, I thought I was doing all right on board, and then just had like all the Cyclonic Rift Overload. I'm just like, oh, just dead. Did have an interesting a couple of sequences. Played against a green red deck day 1, and had my opponent play Arbor Colossus against my board of 2 Boros Reckoners, and they attacked into my Boros Reckoner, and I blocked. And he goes, okay, bestow Boonsender. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, well, after damage. And I'm like, what? No. Like,
right.
And he's like, yeah, well, after damage is what I mean. And I'm like, what do you mean after damage? Like, damage doesn't go on the stack. What are you talking about?
Right.
And he's like, well, I guess we should call a judge. And I'm like, yeah, sure. So he calls the judge. And the judge comes over and is like, so you went to blocks? He's like, yeah. It's like, you went to damage. He's like, well, no. We bestowed this. And he's like, oh, so no takes these back to these. He's like, okay. So I'm like, trigger? He's like, yeah. I'm like, 10 to you? So I felt bad for the guy. The guy was really nice. He wanted to see the deck afterwards and stuff. But I'm just like, he's like, yeah, I wanted to do it after the Boros Reckoner trigger. And I'm like, oh. Like, that's different than what was said. And he had thought that the Colossus would still live. But he had forgotten to account for the combat damage being on the stack, so it wouldn't change too much.
Yeah.
But that's why I just got to be like, well, like, I guess take 10. So that was cool. I had another green red devotion opponent play a Sylvan Primordial against me.
Oh, woo!
Kill my Chandra with it.
That was like, pretty spicy.
Like, he's like, tap all this, and I'm like, all right, well, that's a lot of mana. And he's like, this guy, and I'm like, oh.
Aww.
And I had a dragon and played like a monstrous the next turn, and I'm just like, how many toughness does that guy have? 8.
Huh. Oh, no.
Yeah, that was, I was losing that game. I won the match in the third game, but that game was really awkward. He hit a Garrick before I get a Chain of the Rocks, and I'm just like, well, I actually just can't.
Can't do anything.
Well.
So, but I ended up playing Mono Blue one other time. Chain of the Rocks, really good against Master Waves.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I got really angry about that, about me having multiple Chain of the Rocks in consecutive turns.
He's like, why, how, no one plays this terrible removal spell.
Again, everyone I played against, so like, I will say, for being in such a competitive environment, like, day two, like, you weren't allowed to have anybody watching your matches, and, like, they asked you to, like, leave the area as soon as your match was done, and day two, you had to have the judges, like, take your match slips and everything, so, like, they didn't really change it off and stuff, so, for being such, like, a competitive, you know, scene, like, everyone there was, like, you know, just really nice and fun, casual play against. I got to, you know, talk to Jerry Thompson, you know, kind of congratulate him on him going R&D, but so I played against this guy, and he lost, and he was frustrated, but, you know, he's still cool about it, and then the last round where I had to win to get into money, I played against an Esper control list, and this deck beats Esper, and beat him, and then the other guy I beat the round before was sitting at a table behind, and he's like, "What'd you get, a buddy?" And I'm like, "Oh, you guys are friends? I dream crushed you both."
So what you said about, like, the competitive event had a lot of nice people. I saw this bell curve on Reddit where, like, as the skill of a Magic player increases, his, like, dickishness goes up until he actually becomes good, and then he's really nice, and then, like, then he's fine. But, like, you know, like, the average, like we kind of fit into the demographic of the person who PTQ grinds a lot. Yeah. Like, we're not assholes, I would think. But, like, those people who are like, fair enough. Those people that think they're really, really good are the biggest dicks because they think they're entitled. Then you meet, like, Dan Musler, who's, like, actually good. He's one of the nicest people you'll ever meet, you know? And, like, so I thought that was funny. Like, this little bell curve. And then you become Brad Nelson, and then it's just all back down.
Most of the time when you see people that are like, professional players, like, usually they at least can look at themselves and be like, well, I might be a, you know, diplomat for the game, or you know, something like that.
For sure.
So you'd want to hope that they would be like, well, maybe I should
like a Magic celebrity
be an asshole, you know. But they are a lot of the times the face of the game, you know. When we talk about people that show up and tournament results and you know, see them being, you know, photographed or see them being interviewed, they are representing the game that we enjoy. So hopefully these people are people that are pushing people out of the game actively and are encouraging people to want to be a part of the community.
For sure.
That's obviously the hope. So we'll kind of go ahead and wrap up here, I believe. We still have to talk about the 50K.
Want to say that at the end of the day, like, after the thing was over, like, after I won, I was like, so you get that moment where you're just like, oh, okay, I did it. So what am I going to do now? Because there's a 10-round standard open that's in round 6 and people are playing in it. Well, I decided to go draft. And I got into round 2 of the draft. I won the first round, and I got into the second round. And I'm literally just, like, starting to not be able to pay attention. Like, I just, like, started zoning out. I was so tired. And, like, I let myself get 3-for-1 on a really bad play. And it was, like, game 2 of this match. And, like, I wasn't dead anywhere near it, but I was just like, I just got up, scooped my cards, I'm like, you win, man. I can't play Magic anymore.
I'm done. I just can't do it.
So it's like I reached the moment where it was like, this is where your brain can't play Magic anymore. And I was like, I did it. I found it.
It's really a scary place. Because you, like, just want to collapse.
Alright, so apparently this is actually going to be a really long one. I didn't think we were going to be talking this much. But we'll go ahead and kind of wrap it up here with the TCG player 50K. So obviously this is a pseudo-invitational, right? You need to have a certain amount of TCG player points, which they give out in their tournaments at every level. So 20 gets you in, 50 gets you in and a buy, and then 90 gets you in and 2 buys. So I know a lot of players locally that are anticipating going and at least trying to get in with no buys, but a few lucky individuals that are going to get in with all buys. I think we're all planning on being in the all buy crew. Is that correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Perfect. I know I'm 5 points off, but I think I have those secured. You have all your points.
I have all my points.
And then
I have them secured.
You are secured. So yeah. I guess I'm the only one that's technically.
I have 4 points for you if whoever needs it.
So. Right. Exactly. So we'll all be, you know, sitting there with a 2-run buy in standard, unfortunately, and not modern. But
yeah, that would have been nice.
It is what it is. So we did discuss that this is a split format, so it's going to be both standard and modern.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first 5 rounds are, I think, are standard, yeah. And then the last 4, if it is 9 rounds,
yeah,
the last 4.
It's a GP format. You need to go X2 to make day 2.
Yeah, right.
It's
a 9 rounder. Yeah. It could be potentially more rounds though.
No, it's cut it. It stopped at 9.
It says on the in a bed that I could finish.
You're full of shit.
I'm not. I mean, last year's numbers were about 800 players, and it was harder to get points this year.
Yeah.
Even though Columbus probably, I mean, Indy attracts a large number of people. It had a 700 player open. My assumption is we'd have to be well over, well over 1,000 to start looking at adding an extra round or two.
Yeah,
I don't see that happening.
No, me neither.
So it's certainly exciting for us just because it's in our backyard. It is at the Lesser Convention Center, I will say, the Veterans Memorial here in Columbus, Ohio.
Smells bad, yeah.
And it is quite unfortunate.
Stinky veterans.
That it is there and not the...
honor them.
Yeah.
They still stinky
buildings. Why a veteran a bar of Dove soap?
Da-da-da. It is unfortunate that it's not at the convention, the Columbus Convention
Center. Yeah.
So, but either way, it's not about the venue, it's about the tournament. Now, obviously, Mike, I'm sure, you're probably still going to be on your Boros deck for Standard. I know you have a spicy one for Modern that you don't necessarily want to talk about, but,
so excited.
It's either going to be that or what you usually play, I imagine.
It's actually probably either going to be that or Junk, Ochoa's Junk.
Oh,
but
really?
I think I'm going to be gonna on...
You're going to play with Ochoa's Junk? Is that accurate?
It's either that or Dickman's List. Zing!
Quality comedy here from that year end step.
I'm going to be on Big Boros for Standard still. Maybe a couple changes. I do want to having a stroke. Stroke's no joke.
Is that what the fox says?
No.
Oh.
Anyways, I do want a test against the Naya control matchup, but unfortunately this week there's just not a lot of time for testing.
No.
But I want to at least see how that match plays out. But beyond that, and then, for Modern, I mean, if you listen and you figure it, it's awesome. I'm going to be trying out Mono Red Devotion,
woo,
which was a list that the brainchild of a guy we went to, Josh Hines, went to the Invitational with. He was saying he wanted to try out the deck that had like Demigod, who was playing Nykthos.
Mm-hmm.
Demigod Revenge is cost five red black hybrid. So
right.
Those didn't make the list eventually, but the deck itself has done some interesting things, such as hard casting a Bonfire for a 10. So that would
X
be
equals 10.
X equals 10. So.
Right. Okay. Do the math.
The deck has some explosive draws, so I'm hoping to just be like, okay, here's my board state, and your opponent's like, yeah, sure, land for turn, Nykthos, and then just, like, let all the nuttiness begin. So, I'm excited for it.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I definitely am pretty excited. I hope that deck does come together. And if not, I'm sure that, whatever you play is going to be pretty good.
Uh-huh.
Now, Jordan, have you made the switch over to Esper for your standard list?
I did. I played Esper at FNM this past week and played on Cockatrice. It fixes every problem that blue-white had with dealing, particularly with resolve permanents.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just, most people have, I think Max Teets is the only one that has, I'm just going to play blue-white. But anyone else was playing Esper if they were going to play control.
Yeah, Mike makes a valid point that it just dies to Burning Earth. But I don't know many people besides Mike that are playing Burning Earth, unfortunately. So
it's good against an Naya deck, though, too.
Yeah, no, I mean, against three-color decks, I think the list is insane, or Burning Earth's insane. But I'm open to dodge that bullet. And then I'm also playing Green Red Tron in Modern. I played that at Detroit. And now that I actually have played Sanctioned Modern, I'm a little bit more prepared for that.
Nice.
So. I think I'm probably the most undecided of our group, just because I have lost my ability to play FNM. So I haven't played a lot of Magic lately, and it's been quite disappointing. So I've just been watching and absorbing what's been going on, but I haven't actually been out there and playing with all the cards.
On the streets, yeah.
Just haven't been hitting the streets to play some Magic.
The product.
Yeah, so, I mean, I have Mono Black Bill right now. That's my standard list that I'm looking to play. I think it's well within my wheelhouse. I like how you're making both prostitution and, assumedly, drug references for the Magic.
Yeah, I'm already tied off, so you're going to relax.
I mean, that's fine. We probably shouldn't be comparing our games to highly addictive
chemicals. At your instep, I'd like to apologize to any and all former drug users or prostitutes.
or prostitutes. You don't know, that could be a huge demographic for us.
Willing to trade Shocklands and Skylands for favor.
Wow. Anyways,
don't do that.
So you think you're Mono Black for Standard? You're saying you might be switching.
Oh yeah. So I knew I wasn't going to play white black tokens another time in Modern. It just is not going to happen. It's just not. I'm not a fan of it at this point in time. But I wanted. I just wanted to play something that when I look at Modern, all I see are either mid-range lists that are, you know, centrally green black, and I don't have the access to those cards. I just really don't. And then I'm seeing people play combo lists. And what the fuck, you guys? I'm sorry, listeners. They're still being children. I can't help it. I'm really trying to keep a straight face, but children. That's all we have.
I was like, finish so we can wrap
so
up here.
So all you either see are the black green mid range lists. Yeah, black green X, or just abusive combo decks like Twin, or even blue white red as your control lists. So what I decided to do, and this happened a long time. again. Jordan is attempting to break the podcast. I don't know who this benefits. He is the longest drive home. There was a video that Todd Anderson posted of him going for with a Grizzle Brand Reanimator list.
We played a similar list in Kansas City and did pretty well.
Yeah. So I watched the video, and this looks just like fun as hell. First of all, that's kind of what I want to play. Like, I want to play something that at least looks fun. White Black Tokens did not look fun. You know, it looked like something that I could easily build, but wasn't necessarily the fun list that I wanted to play. And being that I, you know, played Reanimator before in Standard, not necessarily as effective as this list is, obviously is, but it is something that I want to try. And basically, the idea is that it kind of centers around Necrotic Ooze. Now, if you don't know what Necrotic Ooze is, it was a Scars of Mirrodin rare.
I'm so sorry.
You gotta stop this. In all honesty, you are literally decreasing the quality of the podcast at this point in time.
One of these days we'll... Never mind.
So
we'll never talk about
I would appreciate
over.
You listening to me.
Necrotic Goose gains all activated abilities of all cards in the graveyard.
In the graveyard, correct. So you play... You, the main goal is to try to get Grizzlebrand and Borborygmos into the graveyard.
Grizzlebros.
And draw a bunch of cards and, you know, through either Soul Spike. And Soul Spike is a... not Ice Age, but...
Cold Snap?
Yeah, Cold Snap rare that you can exile two black cards from your hand instead of playing the cast cost, which is black, 5. And it deals 4 damage to the target player and you gain 4 life. So it's not a drain, it's actual damage, which is also important for things like Planeswalker and stuff
right,
like that.
Right.
And it's also, I think, you do players and creatures, if I'm not mistaken. So either through that or just, you know, hitting your opponent in the head with lands through, you know, Borborygmos' activated ability. So, and you also have things like Gorgo's Vengeance to bring back those legendary creatures. You play like even a 1 of Burial Rites for value. You have things like Deathrite Shamans.
Sounds fun. I mean, it sounds like crazy.
I just want to play. And you also have things that kind of come out of the sideboard like Abrupt Decay to deal with things like, you know, Rest in Peace, Grafdigger's Cage, Tormod's Crypt, if you know, the occasion just right, basically.
Right, right, right.
So you have answers to typical graveyard hate. It does seem like it's a more of a slower combo deck. Usually, I kill people around turns 4 or 5. But, you know, it just looks like it's so much fun. I've gotten pretty much most of the cards for it. I'm still looking for some odds and ends. But it's what I'm on at this point in time. And regardless of how well I do, I just kind of want to have fun and play Modern. So I think this is how I'm going to be able to do it.
Awesome.
And it could be degenerate enough to win.
Well, no, that's a good thing. What are goals? So you just want to go kind of just play a new deck out and feel it out?
I mean, I want to do well, obviously.
Right.
I don't necessarily know if my experience in either format will lend me to being very successful, just because I haven't really had experience with playing, you know, either of the lists that I'm planning on piloting. Hopefully that my raw skill will be able to champion me through, but we all know that's bullshit. That's not going to happen. So I just want to have fun. I'm not going to do anything else with my points. Like, I might as well do it and get
right.
Some free buys and have a good time, hang out with my friends.
Or sell them and make $100.
Nah, it's not worth it. It's honestly, like...
You've got way too much time to get this.
Right, yeah,
through.
It's just not worth it to fucking sell my points. Like, especially when it's right in my backyard. I'm going to go, I'm going to hang out with my friends, and hopefully we'll go to Barley's. Even if we have to drive, hopefully we'll go to Barley's afterwards.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's basically my goal. I think that's the most I can really ask of myself
sure.
at this point in time.
Sure. I was just asking, because we usually do goals Like, what are your goals for this weekend?
I mean, I cashed the event last year. I'd like to do that again. I think my modern choice is going to be unconventional, so maybe I'll spike it. Probably not. I definitely want at least day two again.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's probably my goal, too, is day two. Yeah. Put a good bit of standard. I feel comfortable in that, especially being able to go 2-0 from the start. You know, I feel like I can 3-0 an event. I can win and win a box. Modern will be interesting. I have the X2 Modern. So I have the 2-2 Modern day one, which is doable. I can fake Tron to a 2-2.
Fake Tron?
I can natural Tron twice. That's fine.
Fair enough.
So I think that's the goal day two. Obviously cash. Like, I cashed the last TCG 5K, which is obviously less difficult, but at the same time, like, it sets a good precedence for me to meet. So.
Yeah, cool. It's just exciting. I can't wait to go. It'll be my first, like, invitational of sorts, so. And I'm glad it's a split format. I think playing 9 rounds of standard straight would have been a little laborious. And it's also fun to have 2 buys, so.
It was fun last year, but yeah.
So I don't know what we're going to do after players meeting, but we'll do something, I guess.
Cards Against Humanity, man.
Yeah, what did I go do? I got coffee. Coffee was a good idea.
Sounds great. Oh, man, that sounds wonderful.
Yeah,
so we'll go ahead and we'll kind of move into just, you know, our wrap-up here and do some shout-outs. Of course, follow us on Twitter at Your Instep. I'm Morg War Marshal. Jordan is I'm Jermaine.
Correct.
Yeah, these will be in the show notes, by the way, too.
Yeah, guys. And so. Then Mike is big_tears. And we also have a website, which also have all this information on it as well. It's just at yourendstep.com. Jordan, you have a blog post that you recently put up there.
I did. Correct? It was about the discussion on Esper and what you think about. Let us know what you think about the Elspeth discussion, because I'm curious what everybody else thinks, too. Go read everybody's blogs on there and comment on them. Mike and Morgan do it, guys.
Okay, yeah, you can make us do it. I'm not a good writer. I don't know.
I'm sure if there's an overwhelming outcry for my additions, I'll consider it.
I'm pretty, I don't know what else I'm going to use.
Let me know, fans.
Yeah, please. what I might even, like, try to do is see if, like, we can do some video content, because I could definitely do video content, like, you know, record some drafts or something like of that, or record some standard events or something. I think that'd be a lot of fun.
Jordan and I did do a draft before we started.
I know, it's very sad that they didn't record it.
We didn't record it, and we lost the finals, but we did get to active treat, well, whatever, you know, portent of
betrayal.
That's it. And met my the Ageless,
and it was awesome. Turn.
So that was pretty sweet.
Oh, also, something that is important with portent of betrayal, if you have the
scry guy, the +2/+0 guy,
if you portent of betrayal him, you get the you take him, and then you get the scry trigger.
Flame Spear Grad Up or whatever.
Yeah, Flame Spear Grad Up. So be sure to portent of betrayal that guy. It's actually
pretty
insane.
Sweet. Yeah,
well, I mean, that's everything tonight. We'll definitely be back next week to tell you about our 50K and the exciting time that was. Hopefully we'll have some interesting stories. But until then, thank you for listening and have a good one.